Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
The number of refugees, asylum seekers, and other foreign-born people who settled in Maine last year was the largest in recent years. As President Donald Trump rolls out his new effort to restrict immigration and limit the number of refugees allowed into the U.S., this morning we learn a bit about how refugees are screened and processed before being resettled here. Reporter Fred Bever has this account of one refugee who came to New England from Africa late last year.
When Charles fled the ethnic violence that killed his parents in his native city of Bunia in the Democratic Republic of Congo, he was around 11 or 12 years old. He doesn't remember exactly. Now 20, Charles spent almost half his life in the teeming Changwali refugee camp in Uganda.
He was safe, and it was not good. He was safe, but not good. It was a very hard life.
He traveled with his aunt named Love and his grandmother, Cecile. It was a relief to get to the Uganda camp, he says, but it wasn't really a home.
Things were not that very good. Food, shelter, water. Shelter was sometimes, you're put in a room without a roof. So most of the nights we used to sleep when it's raining on us.
He's asked that we not use his last name due to continued concern about safety for himself and his family. Within the first 3 months, Charles says workers from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees interviewed him and his family separately for certification as refugees and as potential candidates for resettlement abroad. The UN only refers for resettlement a small percentage of the world's refugees, those it considers most vulnerable to war, violence, or other harms, and refugees themselves cannot make the applications. It's the UN's choice, based on the information they can confirm about the refugees. Charles says local UN staff sought the truth of his story, matching it to records from the Congo and cross-checking it against what his relatives and others told them about what happened there.
Where are you from? Where exactly you ran from? And what are the causes that made you run? For what reason did you run out of where you are? And whom were you living with? What happened to them? Where are they? How old are you? What happened? In what time? What date? What hours of the day did the circumstances that happened and all that? There are a lot of questions over and over again.
Charles says he was interviewed by the UN 3 times in the first 9 months. They took fingerprints and did medical checks as well, a process repeated at least once a year for 8 years. It wasn't until 2014 that the High Commission for Refugees decided to recommend him and his relatives for resettlement abroad. As with most international refugees processed through the UN, Charles had no say over what country he would be recommended to, and he says he didn't hold a preference as long as it was a safe place to build a new life. As he learned, it would be the U.S.
And they told us, if America accepts you, we'll have a lot more interviews for you, we will have a lot more paperwork for you, we will have a lot of fingerprints for you, we will have a lot of injections and all medical stuff for you, so get ready for it.
And Charles says that's exactly what happened, as a U.S.-funded resettlement support center started up its own vetting regimen from scratch. That meant interagency screenings, with Charles's biographical information reviewed and checked against databases kept by the National Terrorism Center, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the State Department. According to guidance originally put out by the administration of former President Obama and still available online, refugees from Syria go through several extra screens, and the information for all potential refugees is rechecked as databases are updated. If no evidence emerges that the applicant is a security risk, no connections to known bad actors, for example, or outstanding arrest warrants, the applicant is cleared for the next step, more interviews by the U.S. Customs and Immigration Services.
They told us, we've interviewed you, you've done everything, but we're not the one making decisions. It's made from the big people beyond us, the one who decide whether you'll be coming in or not.
Once the biographical information checked out, Charles says he and his family went through a new round of fingerprinting to be screened against various databases run by Homeland Security, the FBI, and the Department of Defense. Any doubts raised along the way can derail a refugee's admittance to the U.S. But for Charles, Love, and Cecile, there were never any red flags. And one day an agent delivered them a letter
saying that we've been accepted after they've done all their reviews, and then we knew that we were going to America.
Late last summer, they arrived at JFK Airport, then headed to a place they'd never heard of, Maine. As with most refugees to the U.S., Charles's case was turned over to a non-governmental organization, in his case, Catholic Charities of Maine, which spokeswoman Judy Katzel says spends 3 months helping families adapt.
And then begin that process of learning how to get around, how to go shopping, what the money, the currency is, how to ride a bus, if there are English classes, where people need to be enrolled, if there are young children, do they need to be enrolled in the school system? Our goal is to help refugees become self-sufficient within that 90-day window.
Later this week, Catholic Charities takes over all stateside administrative responsibility for refugees resettled in Maine, as the state will drop its share of those duties. Charles, meanwhile, has taken a job at Catholic Charities, and he plans to go back to school. His aunt and grandmother are taking English classes. In a year, they must apply for green cards, which will require a fresh security review.
For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Fred Bever in Portland, Maine.